personal trainers, whatever it is, there's a whole industry around how do you help people if they're going to go on Ozempic, despite all of the side effects, how can they actually do it in a healthy way? Have you seen any brands or anyone help these people?
Prepare for the avalanche of Ozempic industry products, I'm guessing, right?
No, it's coming and it's coming fast. Like, if you've seen what Atkins and SlimFast have been doing recently, they're positioning the entire brand to be centered around that. And what you're seeing it a lot on TikTok and Instagram, where companies are trying to ride the coattails of the GLP-1 conversation, of meaning that's how Ozempic is working. It is what we call a GLP-1 agonist. And it slows gastric emptying, which essentially just means it helps make you feel fuller longer, right? You're less hungry, which is most people's problem, right? They snack all the time and they're constantly hungry. So it's helping you lower your hunger. So you're seeing a lot of brands, and this it's an opportunity for brands right now while it's hot. Ideally do it with the highest integrity.
Yes.
You're seeing a lot of people do it with not little to no integrity, but it is very popular. People are only going to become more aware of GLP-1. And so if you can find products or you can find ingredients that target GLP-1, will it have the same effects as Ozempic and Wegovy? Probably not. But you're still going to get appetite suppression, which is what clearly a lot of people are looking for.
Yeah, totally. And then in terms of finding the correct information, because again, there's a ton of stuff out there on TikTok, on social media, etc., just telling people like, oh, eat this or don't eat that. Like, how do you think people should responsibly get the proper diet information and find out which products are actually built with integrity are going to help?
Yeah, I wish there was a simple answer, because the problem is there's...
Welcome to the Omnichannel Roundtable, where we discuss strategic insights at the intersection of in-store and online retail. We're your hosts, Brian Alston and Yemini Mesa. Welcome to your seat at the table. Now let's talk shop. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Omnichannel Roundtable podcast, where we are extremely honored to have a guest who is extremely esteemed in the health, the wellness, and the longevity field, Dr. Ryan Lowry. He has a PhD in health and human performance. He is the president of the Applied Science Performance Institute here in the U.S., is the host of the What the Fat podcast, and is the CEO of ketogenic.com and the author of the Ketogenic Bible. So overall, a renaissance man in this field, and we are super honored to have him here on this podcast so we can not only talk about his background and his insights on where the industry is headed, but just to get some tips and tricks on how it impacts the CPG industry in 2024. So Ryan, thank you so much for being a guest.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I'm super honored to be here.
I'm excited as well. I've had the pleasure of being a guest on your podcast a couple of times. So now we get to turn the tables and you get to be a guest on this one. So I'm pretty stoked about it.
I love it.
Where to begin? My goodness, there's so many interesting topics that we could get into with you, because like Brian just did a great job of introducing all of the amazing things that you do. Let's start with, I think, something that's caught in the news right now, and that's Ozempic. Like, you're, by the way, one of the people that I turn to whenever there's something that is happening in the news related to diet, nutrition, ingredients, pharmaceuticals, or whatever, and it's over my head. I'm like, let me call Ryan and see what his take on it is. So I haven't done that on Ozempic yet. I have my own thoughts on it, but I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on, A, it'd be great for you to explain what it is and how it works, but your thoughts on how it's exploding and how many people are just now turning to this as their solution to their weight loss problem. So what are your thoughts, Ryan, on Ozempic?
Yeah, it's super interesting how fast Ozempic and tirzepatide or Zepbound, how fast these drugs have grown. Do they work? I think the obvious answer is yes, they clearly work. Are there potential side effects that people need to be concerned with? Yes, as well. The thing that most people, I think, don't understand when going into it is that these are meant to be lifelong drugs. They're not meant to be, oh, hey, I just took this to slim down for my friend's wedding. And then, like, they're meant to be lifelong drugs for these people who are suffering with severe obesity. like severe metabolic dysregulation. Now, where it's gathered is a lot of people who just maybe have 10, 20, 30 pounds to lose, they're going on it and they're seeing tremendous weight loss success as well. The thing that
let me ask you on that real quick. So you say that they actually work, but what are people losing? Are they losing body fat? Are they losing water? Are they losing muscle? Is it like what exactly? Because everyone who wants to lose weight, I'm assuming, wants to lose body fat. And they just say, I want to lose weight. Is that what Ozempic is doing?
Without training or increasing your protein intake, you're likely losing both. You're losing body fat and muscle. And I think that's where the biggest danger is. And this is the number one thing that most people need to consider is when taking these drugs, you're eating less. Most of the people aren't changing their habits, right? They're not resistance trained. They're not like, oh, great, I'm going to go on Ozempic and now I'm going to start going to the gym. They're going, great, I'm going on Ozempic. So instead of eating a full quarter pounder with cheese, I'm only eating a half quarter pounder with cheese. Yeah, you'll lose weight because of that, but it still doesn't fix the problem of you're probably protein deficient. Mm. You're not providing a stimulus for muscle. And so great, you lost 10 pounds, but 5 of those pounds might have been muscle tissue. So did you really get healthier? Maybe not.
Right, because I think of it as like, let's say somebody starts and they're 30% body fat and then they lose whatever, 40 pounds, but now they're 40% body fat. Like their body fat percentage, they're lighter, but their body fat percentage has gone up because they've lost all this muscle. And now they're in a condition where their metabolism's even in more distress and you're going to have an even harder time keeping the weight off. Right.
And then what do you do? Right. So like, how do you come off?
Where do you go from there?
Yeah. Where do you go from here? And that's where I think there's been zero conversation or people haven't thought about it. Is like, if people are going on them and you're using it as like a transition, you need to have a game plan going into it saying, how do I get off of this as quickly as humanly possible? And then what do I do while I'm on this to combat the negative effects of muscle loss, being protein deficient? What do I do? And you need to have a game plan going.
Are doctors talking to people about this when they prescribe this?
Very few, if any. They're just saying, hey, you fit the criteria. Here's a script. Go on. And again, they're thinking this is going to be a lifelong drug. Great. Go take it.
They themselves think that it's working and doesn't have the complications. The doctors themselves. How shocking.
Crazy, man. Go ahead.
A quick question on that, because it sounds like there's an opportunity there for products like foods, like meal replacements, personal trainers, whatever it is. There's a whole industry around how do you help people if they're going to go on Ozempic, despite all of these side effects, how can they actually do it in a healthy way? Have you seen any brands or any sort of, like anyone help these people
prepare for the avalanche of Ozempic industry products, I'm guessing, right?
No, it's coming and it's coming fast. Like if you've seen what Atkins and SlimFast have been doing recently, they're positioning the entire brand to be centered around that. And what you're seeing it a lot on TikTok and Instagram where companies are trying to ride the coattails of the GLP-1 conversation of meaning that's how Ozempic is working. It is what we call a GLP-1 agonist, and it slows gastric emptying, which essentially just means it helps make you feel fuller longer, right? You're less hungry, which is most people's problem, right? They snack all the time and they're constantly hungry. So it's helping you lower your hunger. So you're seeing a lot of brands, and it's an opportunity for brands right now while it's hot. Ideally do it with the highest integrity.
Yeah.
Seeing a lot of people do it with not little to no integrity, but it is very popular. People are only going to become more aware of GLP-1. And so if you can find products or you can find ingredients that target GLP-1, will it have the same effects of Ozempic and Wegovy? Probably not, but you're still going to get appetite suppression, which is what clearly a lot of people are looking for.
Yeah, totally. And then in terms of finding the correct information, because again, there's a ton of stuff out there on TikTok, on social media, etc., just telling people like, oh, eat this or don't eat that. Like, how do you think people should responsibly get the proper diet information and find out which products are actually built with integrity are going to help?
Yeah. I wish there was a simple answer, because the problem is there's so many, social media has done a lot of good, but it also does a little bit of harm of like, because everyone now has a voice, you don't know who to trust. It's like, great, this person got 5 million views. Does that mean they're right? That they said that drinking lemon water is going to make you lose 10 pounds? Just because I got 5 million views doesn't mean that's right. So, but people don't know where to turn to. So you just have to really look underneath the hood. You have to find trusted resources of like, these are people that have high integrity. I trust them. Or you have to try and do a little bit of research on your own, right? Go to Google Scholar, see if there's any actual published studies to support what they're saying and take it from there.
What would you advise a company in today's landscape that is in the space of health, nutrition? How do they leverage and take advantage of this Ozempic, I'm going to call it opportunity, meaning suddenly there's a big push from pharma, from media, from all sources to get on this stuff because it's a quick and easy fix. But we know that there are real solutions to what people are trying to do. And there are brands that offer products that do help people actually lose weight and get in better shape. But what can they do? You mentioned even that like Atkins is like positioning their entire product or marketing strategy around this. How are they doing that? Like what is the game plan and how do they position it to, how do they leverage it?
Yeah, I think there's two schools of thought, right? One is you can use it as the enemy, right? If you've ever read Story Brand by Donald Miller, one of the best books out there, like you can use that as the enemy and like your product or your company is the hero saying, you don't need Ozempic. Here's all the side effects that come with it. We do this without you having to go on Ozempic. Because clearly a lot of people are paying for this stuff out of pocket. You're talking $500 to $1,000 a month that they're paying out of pocket for this type of prescription if they can't.
It's a weekly injection, right? Is it
weekly injection?
So you're committing to injecting yourself once a week for the rest of your life. That's
literally,
and then paying for that.
Yes, and so you can position yourself as the enemy against that, or what like the route that Atkins is doing, and I think a lot of other brands are doing is they're accepting it. This is here to stay, and we're going to try and work with that consumer that is on these weight loss medications and provide solutions for the surrounding day, right? So how do we provide a meal replacement shake? How do we provide a snack bar that works in conjunction and helps you get maybe a little bit more protein when you're not as hungry, but you need to get protein in because one of the side effects is potentially muscle loss and you're not getting in enough protein. How do we get a large dose of protein in a small meal replacement shake? Mm-hmm. Or how do we get you some amino acids to help prevent some of that muscle wasting that may happen? You're seeing brands embrace that and trying to provide solutions for it.
It's really interesting you mentioned that because if we look at like pretty much since Ozempic became huge about a year and a half ago, like the searches on Google and Amazon for protein powder for weight loss have skyrocketed and are continuing to trend up. I'm just wondering, just like from your vantage point as an expert, what kinds of protein powders or what kinds of ingredients can not only help with that, but also like just like help you like have a full stomach or feel more satiated? Like, are there any things that are already out there that aren't sort of huge corporations that are just things you can just buy at the store to help?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I think it depends on the consumer, right? Traditionally, when you look at meal replacement shakes, the goal was how do I get something in that's going to help me stay full for the next 2, 3, 4 hours, right? It was really meant to replace a meal. Whereas now, some of the people who are on Ozempic, that they wouldn't be able to even finish that shake.
Yeah.
So you're having to figure out, how do I just get them straight whey protein isolate? Or how do I get them the smallest amount of the best bang for their buck, where they don't have to consume this huge jug full of protein that they're trying to make usually keep them full? I need to get them 20, 30, 40 grams of protein in the smallest amount possible because they're going to get super full, super fast.
Yeah.
So it's
a really interesting change in how most people think about these products, because up until now, it's always been, how do we increase satiation? How do we keep you full? Now it's like, oh my God, I can't even finish a shake. So we got to cram as much. There's some good powders out there. Do you remember, or is this still around, ProtoWay? Do you remember that?
Yeah. Protein? I don't know if they're still around, but I do remember.
Oh, man, there was something interesting about that whey protein that you could put like 10 scoops in a glass and it would just mix no matter what super easily versus a lot of like the real thick and chunky powders that are hard to mix sometimes. But it seems like products like that will potentially benefit from this Ozempic trend.
And RTDs, I think a lot of people, I think the RTD trend, you see a lot of those, it's like, hey, you just shake it up. I can pull it out of my fridge and I can chug it down. Those are starting to grow a little bit. There's a lot in the space, but I think you're starting to see those grow as well.
All right. So one trend, which is the obvious one, is the whole Ozempic thing and everything goes along and around it. But what other trends are you seeing? What do you think might be something that is on the horizon when it comes to either products, ingredients, diet trends?
I think we're seeing a huge push that we've never seen before towards anti-aging, longevity. Like it used to, we termed it the old like biohacking. Now it's like transitioned into like, how do I anti-age? Like the new era of the Brian Johnson, which is like the ultimate extreme version of like trying to live forever to like, but I think a lot of people, like even my parents are at a point where they're like, I should probably be looking at things a little bit different. Like, I want to live longer. I think that's on top of everyone's mind right now.
Very true. We were just talking about something similar to that earlier, Brian. But yeah, it makes me think of like Peter Attia in his recent book. I can't think of it right now.
Lifespan, right?
I forget what it's called, but it's a phenomenal book. And maybe we'll put it in the show notes. But it's all longevity focused. And he talks about the health span, not just the lifespan, meaning not just living longer, but actually maintaining your abilities and functions longer so that you can actually enjoy life while you're still alive, which I think is another big component of it. So what is springing up around the longevity space?
To your point, health span is huge. Like here's a crazy fact. So on average, you look at like the lifespan of most human beings, right? On average, you're talking about 78 years old. Most people lose their health span at around 60. So that means that last 18 years of your life is full of death, disease, and suffering, right? Yeah. Like that is problematic. And that's only shrinking. Like it's probably going to be in the 50s very soon. So like that is a very big problem for a lot of people. So the question is, how do you solve that? And so there's different extremes, right? You have like the Brian Johnson, I'm going to eat all of my meals before 9 a.m. and then I'm going to fast the rest of the day and I'm going to take 18 peptides and not see sunlight. Like he's got a very strict protocol.
Yeah.
And that can work for some people. There are some things about his protocol that I've dissected before that I don't 100% agree with. But
it's also not practical for the vast majority of people both from a time standpoint and from a cost standpoint. So
it's not. So like, I think one of the things we're actually working on right now is how do you, one, give people the ability to measure their health span from the comfort of their own home? We have an app that'll be launching later this year that'll be able to do that. Nice. But two is, how do you provide simple solutions to people? Like the reality is, if it's too complex, most people won't do it. And if you look at the things that what I call are like the core four things that move the needle for health span and longevity, it really centers around nutrition. And when it comes to nutrition, I think that is making sure we're getting ample protein and staying what I call carb conscious. Doesn't mean you need to be on a ketogenic diet, but you surely shouldn't be eating like 50% of your diet from carbohydrates. So that's nutrition. Some type of movement, and that comes from deliberate exercise and daily steps. We see that even if you just increase your average daily steps by 1,000, your risk for like heart disease drops significantly. Right. So like ideally you want to get up to about 7,500 steps a day. So you have nutrition, movement, and then the last two are going to be your eating window, which we know that's intermittent fasting, condensing your eating window becomes very important, and hydration. A lot of people, believe it or not, it's crazy how much hydration affects things. And then you have your ancillaries, things like sleep and all of those things obviously play an impact as well. But how do you address this full scope without making it too complex that the average Joe couldn't do it, right?
Yeah, totally.
How do you do that?
Yeah. I think you make it simple, right? So like we're coming up with specific protocols, right? So it's going to be called protocol, but basically how do you come up with a protocol where every day it's as simple as like, my goal is to get 7,500 steps. My goal is to condense my eating window. We're going to be doing it where you're condensing your eating window by 30 minutes each week until you hit roughly about, and we believe that sweet spot's around 8 to 10 hour eating window for most people. And then how do I make sure I'm hitting my hydration? How do I make sure I have easy at-home workouts, right? I think the days we like going to the gym, right? I think that's cool. That's important. But the reality is most people just sit on the couch and watch Netflix all day. If I can get you up and I can get your heart rate elevated for 15 minutes, that is going to have a huge impact on your overall health and longevity, whether even if there's zero weights involved. So those are some of the things we're implementing into it.
Sounds like you're starting like at the basic level where people who are literally completely sedentary and in no way carb conscious, that's like a starting point. And so going from there to at least doing the bare minimum of getting your protein, managing carb consumption, and doing some movement. What about for people who have already gone beyond that and they're already attempting a variety of things, but are probably confused with all of the different advice that conflicting advice actually that they're seeing out there? What is somebody that's already maybe committed to going to the gym somewhat regularly and wants to be conscious about what they're eating? What would you say are the priorities for them?
I think most people, you're absolutely right. I think most people are confused. There's just too much. One, it's if it sounds overly complex, the reality is health shouldn't have to be that way. So you probably don't need to do it. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. Do I think there's benefits to cold plunging? Absolutely. Do I think most people need to be cold plunging? No. I cold plunge once or twice a week. It's cool. Mentally, it's a challenge. But like, is that going to be something that moves the needle? That might take you from the 99.4 percentile to the 99.5 percentile. It's not going to take you from the 10th percentile to the 90th percentile.
Yeah.
So it's like focusing on the things that matter. For that individual who already has it dialed in, the number one thing I think that they could do is get a look underneath the hood, meaning go get your body comp actually looked at, ideally with a DEXA, and go get specific blood work. Like, don't go to your doctor and be like, hey, doc, can I get a general blood panel? They're going to look at general liver and kidney function and total cholesterol, and it's not going to be able to tell you much. But you really should have a good understanding of what your hormone levels are. You should look underneath the hood on like what your VLDL is, what your triglyceride levels are, what your ApoB is. You should be looking at things like C-reactive protein. Like, you could be going to the gym every day, feel like, what, I got this all dialed in, but you have some underlying either high levels of cortisol because you're constantly stressed from business, work environments, family, home life environments, or even high levels of inflammation with CRP. Great. If you didn't know that, once you become aware of it, now I can measure it. Now I can change it. That's where I would take that person.
Nice. Yeah. Good stuff.
So just a quick question on trends. It's like, I'm glad you brought up Brian Johnson. He's obviously gone extremely viral over the past year or so with his many practices that he is using to try to reverse age. And we would love any thoughts you have on sort of the validity or the sort of effects of all of these supplements and all of these different things being done at the same time. But the other thing that would be interesting to talk about is sort of like, what are some of the negative trends that are out there? Like, for example, like we've heard over the past year, like seed oils are horrible, don't eat them. But it seems like every year there's sort of like a boogeyman ingredient, or don't use stevia, don't use this. So it's not just about, hey, here's what you should do, but there's also, here's what you shouldn't do for your health. Are there any thoughts you have on that? And again, how can people get the right information to make the best decision for them?
Yeah, you brought up a good one. Probably, I think the conversation probably of 2024 is the seed oil conversation. I think last year was probably the artificial sweeteners. I think that was a big conversation. And then this year, it's very big on seed oils. From what I've seen on seed oils, I interviewed two different school of people who have two different school of thoughts on this. One person who thinks seed oils are completely fine. They eat them all the time. They looked at like all the data on sesame oil, and it actually shows that like in Asian countries, they live longer and they have great cholesterol profiles. And then you have people that like think seed oils are the devil and like won't touch them, won't even look at them. If they're in a restaurant that cooks with them, they're running out the front door. I sit somewhere in between in that. Do I think that we're overeating? Are people ratios of omega-6 to omega-3s? Do I think that that is off and we are in highly inflammatory states? Yes, I do believe that we are. Now, do we need to run from every single seed oil where it's like, hey, I'm at a restaurant and I'm ordering a burger and I'm like, I'm not going to get ranch because I know that the ranch that they're using probably has seed oil? No. I don't think you need to be that extreme. I do really believe that it comes down to the ratios, right? If you're exercising, if you're eating foods that are higher in omega-3s, if you are consuming like high quality fish oil, you're bumping up those levels of omega-3. But the problem is for the masses, they're just so up here on omega-6 that it's easy to use seed oils as the scapegoat of being like, oh, well, you do that. Because where do you find most seed oils? In a lot of processed foods. You're finding it in chips, in crackers, in anything, any fast food restaurant, very high in seed oils. So I think my advice would be try and minimize seed oil consumption when possible. But you don't need to run out the front door and be like, oh my God, I can never have ranch dressing again in my life unless it's without seed oil. How do you do that? When you're cooking at home, just make better. I wouldn't use seed oils when I'm cooking at home. Like, don't use regular Pam on your spray thing. Don't use any type of vegetable oil when you're cooking. Use some of these alternatives. Use olive oil, avocado oil, butter, ghee. Like, just make better decisions when you can. But the stress of you going to a restaurant and freaking out about like, did that guy put seed oil on the grill that is cooking my burger is probably going to cause you more harm than just having the little bit of seed oil from the burger.
Yeah, totally. I've seen just like so many comments on Instagram being like, oh, don't eat this bar, it has seed oil. I'm like, okay, is it really going to, is it that big of a deal? Like, I don't know. Is it worth like just like warning all these strangers that you've never met about it? So. It's good to hear that I'm like, you're in agreement that yes, you should make whatever is best for you, but it's not this boogeyman ingredient.
It's not. And a lot of the data is mixed on it. And I think where the majority of the bad effects of seed oil data comes from is like when you refry it. So like if you're sitting and like, yeah, if you're having McDonald's French fries and they're sitting there and that oil is being fried over and over and over again, and it's just sitting there, that is denaturing a lot of the fats and lipids that are in there. That can cause a lot more harm than like, cool, it was in a bar that I had, or it's in some chips that I had that were high protein chips, high protein, low carb chips. Like yeah. That's not going to be the thing that's going to make you unhealthy.
Are there any brands that you think sort of just like check the boxes? Like there's just like ones that you eat or like ones that you've seen sort of on the shelf recently that you're like, okay, this is something that a person who is a layman, like someone who perhaps is trying to get off the couch and get into more of a healthier lifestyle, like what are some things that they can just start to eat or drink or consume now to help?
It's a great question. Probably all the brands that you guys have been involved with are the ones I consume. Like if you look at my cabinet, like, and it's funny because a lot of my colleagues will be very against this. Like a lot of people don't like Quest Nutrition. Oh, they use sucralose. Oh, they use soluble corn. People still freak out about soluble corn fiber, which I don't understand. But like there's some seed oils in the chips or things like that. Like I think for the masses, The last thing you need to be worrying about is, oh, there's a little bit of seed oil in a Quest chip versus, listen, I'd rather you eat that than the Lay's barbecue chip that is sitting in. So like Quest, Legendary Foods, like those are my wife and I like snack on that all the time. Like that's like our go-to snacks. I try not to keep too many gummies in the house anymore because a lot of those can destroy my stomach because, and I tend to overeat them, but there's a new company called Joyride that launched, they're probably my favorite gummy right now. They use allulose, which I'm a fan of.
Have you seen these guys, by the way? Speaking of gummies, ever heard of these guys? Rotten?
I haven't heard of them, no.
They also use allulose, and it's a company that we might be potentially working with. But tell me about the gummy space. I'm not normally a gummy consumer. Like, I don't ever buy gummies. But when I received these samples, I got to tell you, they were freaking delicious. And I ate both bags, like, back to back. They're so damn good. And I justified it in my mind. Oh, it's with allulose. I'm good to go. But no stomach issues or anything like that. So that was great. But it seems like I just out of curiosity looked into the segment, and it's tons of brands. It's like exploding.
It's exploded. The question that I have on the gummy brands is, I think 2022, 2023 was the year of functional gummies. Mm. Like, you saw everyone try and create a functional gummy. I actually just saw, what was it, last week, Goalie just went bankrupt. They were valued at like $500 million and they just filed for bankruptcy.
Wow.
Which is crazy. But like, everyone wanted a functional gummy. Why? It's like, well, one, it's nostalgia. You remember back, like, when you had the Flintstone gummies, or like you're giving your kids like multivitamin gummies. It's like, right. Well, half of that's sugar, half of that's just so they would take it, right? So people don't like want to take another pill or do this. They want, like, cool, if I can get my ashwagandha and get it through a gummy, or I can get my magnesium and melatonin at night and I can take it through a gummy. So I think functional gummies still have a play. I think after Smart Sweets, it's been very difficult for normal gummy companies to break through the market. Meaning, like, what makes you there's so many different lower carb gummy bears, right? Like, what's going to be?
Sweets are the guys that have a boatload of maltitol in their product, though, isn't it? Or am I wrong? I could be.
Well, they switched their formula. When she started the company, they didn't. They were using IMO, and then they made the switch. She has the peach rings. She was the one that, like, had a very successful exit. They did very well. But after that, a bunch of brands launched, and no one could really find a way through. Joyride, that company I was telling you about, they are doing, like, sour strips. So it's like a different form factor that makes it unique. Mm. Whereas, like, they're not just doing another gummy or a gummy bear or a sweetest fish type of product.
Right,
they're doing a different form factor. So I think in the gummy space, you either need to be functional or you need to think of a unique form factor that's like, oh, cool, there's a space for this that isn't just a gummy bear.
Yeah. Right? Makes sense.
Yeah. So, like you mentioned, a good switching to our next topic, which is these trends around functional ingredients and how 2 years ago it was functional gummies and there's probably going to be something else in 2025. Like, where do you see sort of the future of, like, the form factors going for the ashwagandhas, for all of these health and wellness trends?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think as a whole with health and wellness, the idea of personalization and customization is only going to get hotter. Meaning, people want to take less, not more, right? Yeah. So, like, if you look at my cabinet at home, it's loaded with supplements. Like, I don't want to have to take, my people laugh when they come over and they look at the amount of pills that I take in the morning. I don't want to have to take that many pills. I don't want to have a pill for ashwagandha, a pill for this, a powder for that. Like, if there was an all-in-one, that would be super nice. And if you look at, like, how Athletic Greens has marketed as, like, an all-in-one greens powder, helps with gut health, helps with this, helps with energy. I think more and more people are going to want that, but at an even higher level of, like, customization. Whereas, how can you look at me and you can go, either I can fill something out online, I can submit my blood, I can submit some type of sample, and you can analyze it. And now give me a custom prescription of, like, this is what you need. Here's the vitamins you need. Here's the supplements you need. And it's all packaged up very nicely for me. Here you go. It's tailored, right? People are willing to spend a lot more money on that. And that's what they're looking for, I think, in the upcoming months and years.
We've had some clients in that space, Brian.
Yeah,
totally. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Very cool. I wanted to ask you a bit more about ASPI. Tell me a little bit more about what it is and what you guys do there.
Yeah. So we have a clinical research center where a lot of companies will come to us and go, hey, we have a product or we have an ingredient and we think it does this, but we need validated claims and we want to substantiate those claims with clinical research. So that's what we do for 99% of it is we do clinical trials for ingredient, supplement, or technology companies. They'll come to us and say, hey, we want to look under, we want to put this to the test. And when you see on a label and you say, in a clinical trial, this is shown to do XYZ, that's what we do. And then we also are very fortunate to work with some of the most incredible human beings, teams, athletes in the world. Like we work very closely with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And a lot of that is we look underneath from a research scientific approach of like, how do you take someone who's already at the 99.9 percentile and make them a little bit better? Right. Yeah. So we do that with Tony Robbins. We actually helped Dr. Dre get ready for the Super Bowl. So like, how do we take these people who are already at the peak of their performance and like just make them a small bit better? You need high level scientific equipment to look underneath the hood to go, all right, here's that one area that you can improve on. Let's get better at it.
So. That's so cool.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you guys end up doing in terms of the protocols for some of these elite of the elite?
A lot of it, I'll give you a great example. We actually just had someone come in who was, he was in charge of all of the banks in the 80s, like literally oversaw all of the banks. Very, very, very powerful, influential guy. Very nice human being, but he's mentally starting to, he's in his 80s, he's mentally starting to see deterioration, right? So we put him through a battery of tests and we're like, all right, let's try and see what's going on. We had him do cognitive testing and he was performing not like way below average on cognitive testing, but like when talking to him, he's still like alert, but his memory's going. So we took, we utilized exogenous ketones. We gave him a dose of exogenous ketones, waited 30 minutes, and then had him retest on the battery of tests. He improved exponentially, right?
In fuel. That's amazing.
With just a quick fuel source of exogenous ketones. And we use that for a lot of our interventions. And so someone like him, we're putting together an entire plan for him for resistance training because he's starting to lose a little pep in his step. So he needs to do a little bit of resistance training, getting some movement in, dialing in his nutrition a bit, and then obviously being on a very regimented supplement protocol to help him improve.
Why are we seeing exogenous ketones take off as a major trend, do you think, with so many great applications?
It's something that's boggled my mind for a very long time. I think there's a couple of reasons for it. And I think it's exogenous ketones still have a lot of legs. And I think you'll see it in 2025, 2026. I think one, exogenous ketones got very mixed up with the ketogenic diet world. And so they got intertwined when they really shouldn't have. That was number one. Number two is a lot of people looked at exogenous ketones from a weight loss standpoint. So you saw a lot of brands try and capitalize on the functional gummy trend. And it was like, great, let me put 100 milligrams of BHB in my gummy. And people didn't see results. And it was like, well, what am I doing? Well, yeah, you're having 7 grams of sugar and literally 100 milligrams of exogenous ketones is going to do nothing for you.
Right.
Other than probably make you gain weight because you're having gummy 7 grams of sugar with each gummy.
Right.
So I think it's really dialing in of like, what do exogenous ketones do? Who can they serve? And who would benefit from them? And what are the different applications of it? So right. I think you're starting to see, for example, companies like the endurance community is widely accepting them, right? They're crushing it with exogenous ketones and they're utilizing them to perform better. Like there is a performance element of it.
Right.
I think there will be a huge energy, focus, mood, like the benefits of exogenous ketones for the brain, I think is what is starting to come up.
Yeah, because it seems like there's a big industry around brain health and brain performance from nootropics to functional mushrooms and everything in between. You would think that exogenous ketones, which we know have a very direct impact and measurable effect, would be completely taking off in that space. I just haven't seen it yet. Maybe somebody needs to figure out how to properly market them
Agreed.
And take over that space. Yeah. Interesting.
Just one thing you brought up that I think would be great to talk about for the audience, because again, like most of our listeners are, you know, the founders or executives at CPG companies. And you mentioned that keto as a whole was a massive trend that really took off, let's say, around 2019 and has, it's still around, but it sort of has stabilized just like gradually over the past 5 years. Since you are obviously an expert in this space, like what do you think sparked that massive lift, let's say, between 2017 and 2019, as well as sort of it being replaced by other diets?
Yeah, I think it has cycles, right? It's like Atkins had its time and people were, and then it like fell off and stabilized, and keto had this huge boom. I think they come and go, but I think one, it works, right? I think that's probably what happens. Like there was a lot of people who committed to a ketogenic diet, saw a tremendous amount of success. And that was at the time when you were starting to see TikTok take off. Instagram was like everyone, it was during COVID. Everyone was at home. They were looking on social media and you're seeing all these people like, oh my gosh, all this is happening. On top of that, it sparked a huge influx of innovation. You started seeing so many keto companies launched. Right. Yeah. There was a keto cookie, cracker, this keto. It was like so many that I think it flooded the market to a point where it was like all of these things were in the market and people were confused of like, what do I do? Like this person says I need to eat super strict keto. This person says I need to eat vegan keto. I need to eat carnivore. I need to eat this. Do I have the keto cookie? Do I count net carbs? Do I count? It was confusion. And what happens when people are confused? They do nothing, right? They become paralyzed. And so I think that took over in that transition on top of the time when Ozempic launched, people became burnt out of diets. They came out of COVID. They were finally like, hey, I'm coming back to the world. I wasn't allowed to go into restaurants. I want to eat the dang rice. I want to go and have that dish that I didn't have. And so people became burned at like diet burned out. Yeah. And I think eventually you'll start to see a resurgence of keto and that. But right now, I think most people are leaning towards this conversation of carb conscious, low carb, high protein. Like that market, I think, is where people are settling. That were in the keto community, I think they're settling in at that world.
You're refreshing my memory as you were talking about some of that stuff there. And I think all that's spot on, but all of that I think was preceded by like a handful of studies, if I recall, that came out showing that fat isn't the enemy that we all thought that it was, and that potentially sugar is really the root cause of everything that's wrong with us. And out of that, it seems like keto suddenly just was born and took traction. And like you said, it actually works. If somebody does adhere to a ketogenic diet, they're going to not be as hungry. They're going to just restrict calories by default, and the rest takes care of itself. But yeah, you brought back some memories. You and I predicted this because back at the time we were thinking, in fact, we learned the lesson the hard way. You and I went to the Low Carb USA event, maybe in 2018 or 19 or something. And we saw like, whoa, like there's nothing but keto products here. How exciting, because we were on a keto diet at the time. And we sampled like everything at the show, only to regret it hours later when our stomachs were completely wrecked from all of the maltitol and chicory root and God knows what other ingredients were being put in there in an effort to substitute sugar and carbs. But yeah, it's a consumer that enters the space with all of the hopes of finally losing all their weight, and they get on the ketogenic diet, and they do so by buying all these products, and then they don't see the results, then they don't do the ketogenic diet anymore. And yep. So we call that, and sure enough, it's the same thing that had happened earlier with the whole Atkins craze. The low carb became incredibly popular. Low carb products flooded the market, and most of them were not really good low carb products. And so that contributed to its decline. So it's a great lesson learned for brands and for product manufacturers to, if there is a trend, often some headline in the news creates the trend and everybody runs to get whatever the thing might be. And then everyone jumps into the space developing products to fill that need. Be one of the brands that actually does the right product. Yeah. I know it's harder. Usually the cogs are not as great, and maybe the development times might take a little bit longer, but you get to be the person with the product that works.
Yeah.
And that will be there for the long haul. Keto will probably never, I don't think, get that hype. I shouldn't say never. That'll catch in the mainstream the way that it did a few years ago. But because it works and because there's so many applications outside of weight loss, it's not going anywhere. And so for people that know how to do it right, and for brands that develop legit keto products, they're still in business and they're still doing quite well.
For sure. 100%.
Yeah.
One other trend, or like an offset of this that we haven't discussed that is obviously on the up and up, is around pet nutrition. We've talked a lot about humans, but I'm sure it's like people are spending more money than ever on their pets. I was just talking with my mom because like she had a bunch of dogs growing up, and she was always saying back in my day, they just ate the table scraps and they lived like until they were like 30 years old and they were just as healthy. And now these new dogs and cats need all this stuff. What's up with that? So you're seeing all these people, all these pet parents spending so much money, not only on their pets in general, but also on the food that they eat. Are you seeing any of the kinds of trends that we've been talking about for humans also apply to pets?
Yeah, 100%. And Yemini and I have talked about this a lot, and it's amazing. I probably, if I sat down, and I probably won't do this because I'd be alarmed at how much I do spend on my dog each month, but like it's a lot because he takes four different supplements. He gets raw food. I mean, like, you name it, we're trying to do everything possible to make him live longer. So yeah. It's amazing how much people will spend on they'll spend more on their pets than they will on their own health.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to continue. I don't see that slowing down anytime soon, because you love them, that you have a finite amount of time with them, and you're willing to do whatever you can to get another 3, 6, 9, 12 months with them of high quality life. So I have seen that. I've seen a lot more supplements emerge in the pet space. That has been super interesting for me to watch. Like, I'll give you a prime example of one of the companies. We actually did human studies for them back in 2013, 2014. And it was this ingredient called Fortitropin. It's fertilized egg yolk. So it's literally like egg yolk. They fertilize it and it's like this powder. And we did a study in humans where we literally had these humans like taking a scoop of it and like putting it in their mouth. And like, that's how you have to consume it, because it doesn't mix well in water at all. Like, they literally had to take it like popcorn. Yeah. And so they had to just like take it down the hatch. They realized that the human market was not going to do that, right? Like, humans are not going to consume a supplement like that, but they are crushing it. They took the exact same product, did not change a single thing, didn't change the bottle, didn't do anything. They took all that, started marketing it towards pet parents, and I literally every night sprinkle it over Scooter's food, and he loves it, gobbles it up, and it helps with muscle. We actually saw in humans it helped with muscle, helps with joints. So like,
what's the name of that product?
Oh God, it's from a company called Myos, MYOS, and it's fertilized egg yolk. But it's literally like this yellow powder you just like put over top of their food, and they love it. And I think like if you look at HMB, like a lot of our research, our early research was on that. Jacob, my business partner, his entire dissertation was on HMB. HMB, now you're seeing a lot of products that are launching with HMB marketed towards pets, because if the theory is, if it works in humans, why wouldn't it work in pets? So I think there's an enormous, enormous opportunity in the pet space.
Totally.
Bring back some memories. I think I launched the very first product with HMB in it back in the 90s. We put it into a protein powder at the Metrics company. Dr. Connolly was well ahead of his time back then.
It's huge.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, we have asked a lot of questions to you. Before we wrap up the podcast, was there anything else that you wanted to discuss that you think we haven't touched on?
I would like to ask you guys, what you guys are obviously very intimate with the space. What are you guys seeing trending going 2024, 2025 in the supplement food space? Like, what are you guys seeing is hot right now?
Definitely things that are tailored, that are personalized. So anything that involves testing and then using the results to customize formulations definitely seems to be a trend. We've talked to multiple brands that are doing that and are trying to get into that space. So that's pretty interesting. What do you think, Brian?
I would say two major things. One is a desire for real ingredients. Like people like are really liking ingredients that they can pronounce. Like that's like something that I'm really seeing being advertised. I'm seeing it in the comment sections. I'm really seeing it in the reviews for some of these brands that are on Amazon that are growing. People don't want chemicals. And even if it's healthy and all of that, they're like, they just assume like if it's too complicated, it's fake. So I think that there is this sort of thought that Mother Nature knows best almost. And it's best to sort of just use whole ingredients, real ingredients, even if it's worth paying a little bit more. Again, the like validity of that, that's like up for the experts like you to decide. But I would say that that's like a really, really big desire for the market. And it's almost like using food as health. There's this one brand that I encountered back when I lived in LA like years ago who was really ahead of their time. It was called Beaming. It was like this sort of, were like the best cookies I've ever had. But their whole thesis was this, where it's like you can eat your way to better health. So it's like they had like a ton of like macronutrients, a ton of stuff in the actual cookies and smoothies and baked goods themselves. And the line was always around the corner. Unfortunately, they went out of business during COVID, but I've always thought about them and how like they were really on it, perhaps 8 years too early. And now we're starting to see the market catch up with that. And then like we mentioned, the whole pet thing. I think that people are really, they are seeing pets as their kids. And it, like a lot of people who are our age aren't having children. So they want their pets to have the same, if not better quality of life than they have. And they're spending a lot of money on the food, the supplements, the nutrition, the exercise, the overall wellness of their pets. Like there was even this company that does podicures. I'm like here in Seattle, that's blowing up. There's pet hotels. So it's not just about the CPG. It's about this whole cottage industry that is scaling much faster than what we're seeing in the human space.
That's amazing. I've got another one for you, Ryan, and I'd be curious to get your take and thoughts on how this category could potentially develop. But one that we're seeing, an emerging trend that we're seeing is the non-alcoholic beverage category and how that's growing. Obviously, non-alcoholic beers are big, but also the whole mocktail segment seems to be on fire. And we've actually been talking to a company in that space that's got a really neat product that we're hoping they're able to get some traction with and do well with. But it seems like it's being driven by Generation Z, the 20-something-year-olds who don't want to just drink all the time, all day, every day. And so they want alternatives to not just not drink, but maybe drink less. But it's an interesting feat for these companies to try and accomplish because they need to deliver, obviously, an experience that somewhat mimics drinking, both in how it tastes, but also in how it makes you feel. And so there's obviously a lot of competition around the types of functional ingredients that might be included in some of these products to achieve that without actually using alcohol. What are your thoughts? Have you seen any trends here and any particular ingredients that might be useful in achieving some sort of buzz?
Great, great point. And I think it was in the last couple of years, it's been a very crowded space because what happened is the big retailers were like, or the big companies were like, oh, let me just take my existing product and try and make a non-alcoholic version of it. And it's like, well, that's not what they didn't want, flavored sugared water. They wanted the experience. And so That's the magic, right? Is how do you deliver something that's experiential, that still tastes pretty good, that has like a sexy brand around it that makes people not feel like, oh, I'm the party pooper, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny. I think the number one, I would be very interested, and I've said this, someone's got to take this and run with it. Is I think
just talking about that yesterday.
Yeah, I think the guy from Frank from Ketone Aid has the right idea. And it's fascinating. It's a whole nother, we could do an entire episode on this, but like, it's super interesting to me that HVMN, who is marketing towards high level endurance athletes, is using the same exact ingredient that Frank Loza, who's marketing towards an alcohol alternative. They're using the exact same ingredient and marketing it to two polar opposite.
Yeah, that's great.
Like one's trying to win the Tour de France and one's trying to get a buzz to like hang out with their friends on the weekend. And I'm like, I think Frank has a lot of legitimacy to what he's doing with the alcohol alternative. And I think someone should take 1,3-butanediol and make a badass, like really good alcohol alternative for two reasons. One, 1,3-butanediol does give you a buzz. Like you do
get from experience. We tried that in Quest and yes.
You get the buzz. It surely will give you the taste of alcohol because it's got an alcohol backbone. It's rough the flavor of, but it gives you the buzz. And there's a new study that came out on ketones showing that when you're taking exogenous ketones, you actually want alcohol less. Like your yearning for alcohol goes down.
Wow.
So not only you won't want alcohol, you're getting the buzz and you surely won't have a hangover. In fact, you'll probably feel better the next day. So it's like it hits on all these points that I think people are looking for that. Yeah. I'm hopeful that someone will take that and create an awesome brand with it.
It's really funny you mentioned that. Literally our first guest on the podcast, which we did the episode yesterday, is the founder of a company in this space. And he's come up with some interesting formulas to try and achieve that, but none of them involve an exogenous ketone. And I've always thought, like, why hasn't that taken off? In fact, I know we touched on it earlier, but I was thinking back to some of the Quest days, Ron and his lab and all the great people working there. And one of those days, everyone trying the exogenous ketone and everyone getting buzzed off of it. It was pretty funny. But I'm like, wow, this can be made into a product to be an alternative to alcohol. So very interesting.
Yep. Alcohol alternatives and while you're on that topic is things to help prevent hangovers. Like we're doing research right now on an ingredient that's meant to target that. But like there's a lot of interest from people of like, what do I take? Because they want to go out. They want to enjoy themselves or they want to have a glass or two of wine and they don't want to wake up feeling like trash the next morning. So it's right. Like, how do you provide something that's either an alternative, like the 1,3-butanediol or some of these non-alcoholic drinks, or how do you provide an ingredient or supplement that prevents that hangover the next day and makes them be like, oh, okay, I woke up. I didn't feel like I drank the night
before.
Right? Yeah. How do we have something with electrolytes, right? Maybe something with dihydromyrcetin to help speed up alcohol metabolism. Like how do you create that magic formula so that way you can feel that way? That's hot right now.
There's two components to this. One is an efficacious formula, like you were just describing. But the second component is the brand. And I'd like to think of Liquid Death as like this great example of it's all branding. They're just selling water. There's something magic in the can. But they've certainly provided an alternative for somebody who wants to be at the party and doesn't want to drink. And they want to hold a can in their hand that makes it look like it's drinking.
Yeah.
And so if you can somehow deliver on the type of marketing that those guys pulled off and couple that with a product that actually delivers the experience without the side effects, that would be a massive winning combination. And that would be what would help somebody establish themselves as the leader in this emerging space, which I don't think it's happened yet.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, we could probably go on and on and on for many, many more hours, but we should probably wrap this one up. Brian, was there anything else that you wanted to touch on or mention before we conclude?
No, just a huge thank you to Dr. Lowry for the incredible insights that you've shared, the great questions that you've asked, and I think it's going to give a lot of value to the listeners on the podcast as well as anyone else who's interested in learning more about you. Are there any websites that we should guide people to if they want to secure more like from you, Dr. Lowry?
Honestly, best place would probably be Instagram at Ryan P. Lowry on Instagram. I'm happy to answer any questions, and then that's the easiest way to connect. But yeah, I appreciate you guys for having me on. This has been an incredible conversation.
Cool.
Likewise. Cool. Thank you.
Are you ready to take your business to new heights? Click on the link below to connect with me and my partner, Brian. We've got one heck of a track record helping companies go from startups to $100 million brands and beyond. And I bet we can do the same for you. So click on the link, give us a call, and we'll be chatting with you soon.